All kinds of studies have been made with regard to factors which motivate people to live as they do. We've already covered enough ground in this program to establish the fact that people are responsible for their personal lives, barring some act of God or government, catastrophe or war that might intervene to change things, permanently or temporarily. For example, a lot of my friends, many of them very good friends of mine, were killed during World War II when they were in their 20s and 30s. The lives of others have been unalterably modified by injury or serious illness. But for most of us, we have our health, which is the natural inclination of all nature, and we have our lives to live. Sometimes, believe it or not, that's a personal handicap. It often takes the physically handicapped to demonstrate for us the unlimited possibilities that exist as an option for those willing to set goals and stay with them until they're achieved. While the healthy among us often take the path of least resistance, I think it was Bill Veeck when he had the Chicago White Sox who said, "I don't want the natural athlete. I want a guy who'll go after the hard ones." It's the people in this world willing to go after the hard ones who achieve greatness. They're motivated. There's that word again. They're motivated to give the last ounce of themselves in the achievement of their goals. Now let's look at some facts of life. Only about 5% of the people achieve unusual success during their lives. These are the people who earn larger incomes, live in better neighborhoods, in better, larger homes, have better education, more of the good things of life, and make a correspondingly larger contribution to their communities. They tend to speak better English and send their kids to better schools. There are always exceptions to any rule, and there are many exceptions to this 5% group. I know a man who's head of one of the largest, best-known companies in the United States who can hardly put 10 words together in their proper order. If murdering the English language were a misdemeanor, he'd be on death row. Yet he has mansions, yachts, private jets, the works. Why, with no more than perhaps a sixth-grade education and the apparent determination to assiduously avoid any improvement to it, has this man and his family enjoyed such spectacular financial success? Answer: he knows how to serve the people. His organization serves millions of people every day of the week. He's worked hard all of his life to build the great organization he heads, and he's done a fine job of it. So he can buy $3 million yachts and pay cash for them. And when he wants to go someplace in a hurry, there's his Gulfstream 3 warmed up and ready for him when his chauffeur takes him to the airport. But most people in that top 5% fit the earlier description. Many of them are not rich by the standards of our mega-millionaire friend, but they're in the top 5% of American incomes. They're set for life, and they, as a group, tend to enjoy themselves very much. They play a better game of golf or tennis than most of the country's hackers, and they love their lifestyles. Now, a child is born in the United States. The odds, because of the statistics we've been talking about, are 95-5 that he will not be born into this top 5%. Like most children, he'll soon take his environment for granted. Let's assume he's a boy, although it works the same way for a girl. It will save my having to say he or she all the way through this interesting example. He grows up accepting his environment, his world, and his world is his environment as it is. Without giving it a single thought, his environment becomes a natural part of him. Everything about his environment is a conditioning factor. The speech of his parents and relatives and neighbors becomes his speech. What he learns in school will have very little effect on it. That's why you hear grown-up men and women who've gone through the American school system saying such things as "ain't" and "where's it at?" They didn't learn those locutions in school. They were the habitual pattern of speech they heard in their environment. I know an attorney who still says "where's it at?" Anyone's speech habits are an immediate tip-off as to his upbringing. The only reason mine tend to be rather good is because from the time I was a small child, I wanted to be a writer, and words were of great interest to me. Words are the tools of a writer's trade, and a good writer will have a decent inventory of them and tend to keep them well-oiled and shiny. I was the only person in our family so affected. The rest had other interests, education not being one of them. If the statistics were reversed, it would be wonderful. If 95% of the people were successful to the degree the 5% are, the odds of a child being raised by the right group would be reversed. But that's not the case. So our typical young man or young woman grows up to mirror his or her environment. He thinks as they think. He takes that life for granted. All the people he loves are in that group. It's his group, too. And if he doesn't come across some unusual motivation along the way, he'll become an indistinguishable part of it. He does that because it's the perfectly natural thing to do. Their goals, or the lack of them, become his goals. A nice house on a nice street, a steady job of some kind, a good, steady income, a good wife and good kids, and so the story goes. He operates on minimums all the years of his life. He never, except while playing in sports or getting ready for a date as a young man, gets out of low gear. It isn't necessary in the United States. This country's so affluent, so vital, and so perennially booming that people don't have to shift into second or third gear in order to meet average requirements. And neither do most of the people throughout the world. Nor should they have to if they don't want to. His wife, while their children are small, is the hardest working human being in our society. She has no 8-hour day or 5-day-a-week system. She works 16 hours a day, 7 days a week, and according to a recent survey, if she had to do it all over again, she'd think twice about it. More than 50% of her number also hold down a regular paying job. She didn't know about the 5% either. No one ever said to this young man or this young woman, "Now look here, there are two very distinct groups of people in our society. They're in different layers of this socioeconomic pyramid." And here, the parent or teacher would have sketched a pyramid. "Now there's the top 5% who live and work in this top section here." And the person would have drawn a line into what represents the top 5% of the pyramid. "Now here's what we call the great middle class in America. It's divided into two main groups. The upper middle class," another line would be drawn on the pyramid, "and the lower middle class. The United States has the largest middle class of any country in the world. And then down here at the bottom, these few lower layers, these are the people who, because of 1,000 perfectly good reasons, need to be helped by all the rest of us. They have difficulty coping. Many of them are too old or sick to help themselves. We have some 25 million functional illiterates," and so on. So these young people would see very clearly their options. It would be made clear to them that they have the freedom, thank God and our forefathers, to choose. They have the option, if they so choose, to live and work on virtually any layer of that pyramid. And it should be pointed out to them that the higher up on that pyramid you climb, the better the view, the fresher the air, the smaller the crowd. Now that's important to know, but it takes more effort to climb higher on a pyramid. It's much easier to settle for these lower layers. You don't have to learn so much, and so on. "Now," the parent or teacher might continue, "we live right here at this level on the pyramid." And then the parent or teacher might say, "It's not in the higher levels, but it's certainly not in the lower levels either. It's where I wanted to be. Your mother and I have been quite happy here." Well, I hope you get the picture. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we would be shown that when we're about 12 or 13? Wouldn't it be great to know we had that option, and to see that pyramid? Well, this program is for the people who want to be in the top 5%, and it has a great deal of what we need to know to get into and stay in the top 5%. And while getting into the top 5% may be one's goal, it's good to remember that like any destination on planet Earth, there are a million ways to get there. Any road will do, any calling will do, if we go about it the right way. You can get rich hauling garbage, and many have already done so. It's a vital service to the community, but you have to go about it in a certain way. This young man, and now that we've brought his wife into the picture, this fine young woman, because of their past environment, their conditioning, come under the statistics of average Americans, because they live their lives in an average way. But of course, they're not really average people. With the right motivation, they could become very uncommon people and do very uncommon things. They could render much greater service to their community and reap a much more abundant harvest as a result, if they knew what we're talking about in this program. Now, what are the odds that they will ever come across Dr. Bran Blanchard's advice about happiness? Do they know what happiness is and where it comes from? Has either of them ever truly explored his and her potential strong point? What is it that your original genetic pattern makes you especially qualified to do, young man and young woman? What do you most want to do? What brings you the greatest joy? Do you know your rewards, all the years of your life, will be determined by the extent of your contribution, your service to others? Do you know why some people are paid $20,000 a week, while others are paid the minimum wage? Bill Cosby earned $12 million in 1986. Do you know why? It's because of the people he serves. There's an investment banker in Los Angeles who earns about $40 million a year. Do you know that as far as is known, there's no limit on earnings? What would you like to earn? How about $1,000 a week? That's $52,000 a year, or twice that. That's not all there is to living by any means, far from it, but it does pay the bills. And if you earn an income in the upper 5% of the population, there you are, in that top 5% of the pyramid that the sun hits first as the earth does its daily rollover act. And the sun is still shining on it later in the day when the rest of the plain is dark. It's nice up there. And shooting for it will bring out the best that's in you. You'll do more for others. You'll make a greater contribution. You'll give more to charities. You'll help more people. So how about it? There's a talk I'd like to give to young people. Some would say I'd stir discontent among them, but I would reply that discontent is the greatest motivator of them all, and it's responsible for every great boon to humankind, from running water in the inside toilet to the supermarket. A little discontent is a good thing, especially when it's discontent with ourselves. The effect of environment is an incalculably powerful force. The deepest craving of young people is to be liked by their fellow students. Acceptance and esteem in the eyes of their contemporaries is their deepest craving. So they begin to do what the other kids are doing, and the other kids begin doing what they're doing, and everyone acts just like everyone else. They dress alike. They talk alike. They laugh at the same things, even when it isn't funny. It's at this critical age that they begin to play, not follow the leader. That'd be all right. The game they play is called follow the follower. Day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, these young, wonderful, impressionable people conform to one another. They never ask, are the people to whom I'm conforming qualified to lead me? It's belonging that's important, belonging to the group. And that's the subtle trap that gets practically everybody. If we don't break out of that trap sooner or later, we'll end in it. Millions, no, billions do. It's astonishing how many adults never break out. We see them in their 50s and 60s, still playing to the wrong crowd, still trying to be one of the boys. Do you remember what Willie Loman said in Arthur Miller's great play, Death of a Salesman? He said, the important thing is to be liked. Willie Loman never grew up. He never knew who he was. His story is a modern tragedy. It's always been a tragedy. It's the story of the mob. That's why so many young, healthy women are smoking today. It's their way of going counter to what they know is the intelligent thing to do. It's their small and very pitiful rebellion. When a person has no identity of his or her own, that person will seek to find that identity in a larger group. That's why joining groups of various kinds is so popular. In that way, we get a badge, a label that tells us what we are. Now we're properly labeled. This is not to say that successful men and women do not belong to organizations. They certainly do, and they make major contributions to their organizations. But they don't need the organization for identity. They're quite aware of who and what they are. And if their organizations did not exist, they would be successful, independent performers in society. They would never feel lost. Successful people follow independent paths. This is the important point to remember. At some point in their lives, they break away from the crowd and start on a path of their own. That's the adult, the intelligent thing for a human creature to do. In striking off on an independent path, they're not necessarily alone. It's just that they join a much smaller group of like-minded people. They can't take the whole crowd into that top 5%. The ancient Romans had their circus. Modern Americans have their television. It's far superior to the old Roman circus, and they don't even have to leave the comfort of their living rooms. It's true that there are many wonderful things on television, and an eclectic approach, that is, selecting those programs in which you're really interested, makes sense. But millions of families have the television sets on all day. They're mesmerized by it. And when one thinks of what they could be doing with some of that time, It makes one realize that it's much easier to win. One of the best things about getting in that top 5% is that as we get older, life need not become less interesting for us or more laborious. We become more productive as we approach our 60s and 70s and often many years beyond. And it's nice to grow older with all the goodies of life. It's more comfortable. One can spend one's winters in Florida or somewhere south of the equator and one's summers in the cooler, healthier climates. And one can enjoy all the benefits of the good life. But perhaps most importantly of all, one can say, I gave it my best, and I'm not through yet. It's been a wonderful experience, this holiday on Earth, and I've enjoyed it very, very much. Now let's see what we can do with the rest of it. Yes, I think it's actually easier to win. There's less competition up there where the view is so much better and the air is so fresh and clean. And it's almost never too late. For with a purpose, a worthy goal, and the motivation to reach those upper layers on the pyramid, a person can travel farther in a few years than he might otherwise travel in a lifetime. Like most writers, when I see something I wrote 10 years ago, I invariably see ways it could have been improved. I didn't see those possibilities 10 years ago, but it's easier to see them today. It means I've grown as a writer, that I'm better, that I'm a more effective writer today than I was 10 years ago. I'm worth more today. And if I continue as I have been doing, I'll be much better and worth a lot more 10 years from now. Before the atomic age, chemistry professors used to say that a person's worth, from a strictly chemical standpoint, was about $32 on the going market. In recent years, this view has undergone a startling change. Scientists now calculate that if the electronic energy in the hydrogen atoms of your body could be utilized, you could supply all the electrical needs of a large, highly industrialized country for nearly a week. A DuPont scientist said that the atoms of your body contain a potential energy of more than 11 million kilowatt hours per pound. The average person, by this estimate, is worth about $85 billion. Moreover, the electrons in the atoms of your body are not just particles of matter, they're waves of living energy, and these waves ripple out and spread themselves in patterns of light, and as they move, they sing. If you had the proper hearing aid, you could hear a great flow merging with the waves of neighboring atoms, and they not only sing, they shine. If you stand in front of an infrared television camera in a completely dark room, the screen will show you from top to toe as a glistening, radiating, gleaming form. In short, you're a whole lot more than meets the casual eye. Add to all this the fact that to try to reproduce your mind mechanically would cost many billions of dollars, and you begin to see yourself for what you really are, an amazing, infinitely valuable creature. And not only are you immensely valuable as a human being, you're unlike any other human being who ever lived or ever will live. You are unique. Now, what are you selling all this for? All human beings are priceless, but the payments, tangible and intangible, they receive from life vary greatly. The purpose of this message is to help you decide just what you're worth as a human being right now on the market in today's society and what you intend to be worth, say, 5 years from now. In the last analysis, every person is in reality in business for himself or herself in that they're building their own lives regardless of who happens to write their paycheck. So for the purpose of this particular message, I'd like you to think of yourself as a business, let's say a corporation. You hold the office of president of this corporation and that you're responsible for its success or failure. You and the members of your family are stockholders in your corporation, and it's your responsibility to see that the value of the stock increases in the years ahead. Your family has evidenced faith in you, and it's your responsibility to prove their faith is justified. This is the job of any employed family member. Now, while the operations of a corporation are multitudinous and complex, they can be reduced to four basic functions. Number one, finance. Two, production. Three, sales. Four, research. Without proper financing, there'd be no production. Without production, the company would have nothing to sell. Without sales, it would have to completely stop production. Without research, it could not hope to keep abreast or ahead of our rapidly changing times. Now, slight any one of these four vital functions, and you have a deformed, a crippled company, and if you slight it long enough, you'll commit corporate suicide, unless you want to cop out for that average business. We discussed finance, the money part of the whole thing, on another cassette. For now, let's concentrate on research, production, and sales. They are the head, hands, and legs of a company. We could say that the head handles research, the hands take care of production, and the legs handle sales. Cut off any one of these parts and you're left with a shocked, staggering organization. How many once large companies and trade names can you think of which became giants and then disappeared entirely from the economic scene? Names which once were world leaders in their fields and are now only memories. They failed to keep in balance these four crucial functions. What about research for your personal corporation? Research can be said to exist in two areas, present and future. That is, the research of a company should be devoted to ways and means of improving its present products or services, present production, and present sales. Future research is concerned with ways and means of developing new products and services, new methods of production, and new methods of marketing. But while this research is going on, present production must continue at as high a level as sales warrant. In short, a corporation, your corporation, has two factors to consider, the present and the future. How successful we are in meeting these challenges will determine our present profits and our future growth. Now, why are all companies concerned with growth, even when they seem to be doing well today? It's because of a law which operates with companies just as it does with human beings. Nothing in the world stands still. Nothing in the entire universe stands still. A law of physics goes, a body in motion tends to remain in motion until acted upon by an outside force. A company which is growing has a tendency to continue to grow. In other words, it's doing things right. Conversely, a company which is going backwards or shrinking has a tendency to continue to go backwards or shrink until acted upon by an outside force. All responsible company officers know that unless a company is growing, it's developing the first signs of death. Well, you're the head of your personal corporation, and you should realize that this same law applies to you as well. And just for a minute, let's take a look at the next 10 years. Before we do, keep this in mind. If anyone had predicted just 10 years ago that we would be living in the kind of world we have today, he would have been ridiculed. Now, this includes everything from our basic industrial technology to the luxuries and new products we take for granted, along with our present average income. We're reaching a point in the expansion of human knowledge where our advance is more than dynamic, it's explosive. Any prediction for the next 10 years is very likely to be far on the ultra-conservative side, but let's take a look at what the experts have to say. According to many recent research studies, the next 10 years are going to offer business and the individual unlimited rewards. In the next 8 to 10 years, the bulk of spending in the highly developed nations will be for things, products, and services over and above the necessities, far above them, the necessities which are food, clothing, shelter, transportation, and medical care. Imagine, most of the spending will be for things above and beyond the necessities. This will be the first time this has happened in the entire history of the human race. It's estimated the consumer market will expand 50% and more in the next generation or so, an astonishing increase, soaring into the hundreds of billions of dollars. In the next 30 years, alongside every building now in existence, a new building must be built. And what about research and development, which is the future of our economy? Today, more money is being spent on R&D in a single year than was spent during the past 150 years. Think a moment. What does all this mean to you and your own individual company, the one of which you're the president? It means your future is unlimited, if you'll see yourself in relation to the present and the future. Never before, throughout all the centuries of man, has a person faced as bright a future as yours. Our population, too, is getting a lot smarter. Educational advances during the past 30 years have been remarkable. During the next 30, they'll probably be amazing. The customer is getting smarter every day. And if we're going to continue to meet his or her demands and sell him or her our products, we better get smarter every day, too. The market of the next 10 years will be characterized by diversity, not uniformity. It'll also be dominated by taste, not necessity. There'll be a great increase in the quality as well as the quantity of consumer choices. There are many signs of the rising urge for the better things in life. Many millions of adults are currently interested in after-hours study programs, and this number is growing by millions each year. Well, that's just a glance at a few of the things going on around us and what life will be like in 8 to 10 years. Now, each of us, as president and unquestioned manager of his own corporation, can decide what to do about it. We can either grow with it or go backward. We cannot stand still, even if we'd like to. This gives us an opportunity to stand back and look at ourselves and our futures objectively, as an intelligent stranger might. Ask yourself, how much am I worth right now, today, as a corporation? What's my value today to myself, my family, my company? If I were an outside investor, a stranger, would I invest in this corporation? A company growing at the rate of 10% a year will double in size in about 8 years. What attention are you giving to the production of your personal corporation? Can you grow and improve as a person at least 10% a year? Of course you can. In fact, if we go along with the experts' estimates, a person can increase his effectiveness anywhere from 50 to 100% and more within 30 days. Our files are filled with reports from people who exceeded their previous performance to an almost unbelievable extent. People in management and in production who multiplied their effectiveness many times. Students who moved from failing grades to straight A's in the dean's list. People in sales who found they could, through the proper management of their abilities, minds, and time, sell as much of their company's products in a single month as they had previously sold in an entire year. Think what that means. It means being 12 times as effective as a human being. And getting back to the law of cause and effect, it means putting out 12 times as much service, which must and will guarantee our receiving eventually 12 times the reward we formerly knew. 12 times the reward. Remember, please, if we do twice as much, we have to receive twice as much, and nothing on earth can keep it from us. And the same thing applies if we triple our effectiveness. You and I know this, everyone should know it, but remember that fully 95% of the people do not know this. Think of the advantage this gives us. It isn't that we want to take advantage of anyone, and we're not. But it dramatically demonstrates the truth of the saying, knowledge is power. You'd be amazed by the great numbers of people who stop learning when school is over. Aside from company manuals and such internal literature, they read very little of anything of real value. The introduction to recorded learning, pioneered by this company, has made substantial gains and is growing rapidly, but as yet has only scratched the surface. An ongoing education is vital. If we're to stay vital, there's so much to learn, and our school curriculum touched only a fraction of it. One of the most important subjects is getting along with people. We can only do things, we can only win through people, and that subject isn't taught at all in school. The great ideas we're talking about in this program are seldom taught in the home and almost never in school. Go through our catalog of programs carefully. And one by one, you can maintain an effective ongoing education program for many years to come. It's true. Knowledge is power. What's more, knowledge shows on our faces, and it's apparent in our speech. It helps us raise our children, get along better with our neighbors and fellow workers. Above all, perhaps, it's the greatest motivator in the world. As we learn, our horizons recede. We realize there's more to do and more time in which to do it. Old myths about getting out of action at age 65 disappear, and we realize that as long as we're learning and teaching and growing, it need never stop, and we become more effective with the passage of time. Tomorrow is a brand new day, the great equalizer, no more nor less than anyone else on earth can have. Right now, begin to think of ways in which you can begin to increase your effectiveness, raise your production, knowing that by so doing, you're automatically presetting your rewards. Each day that comes to you, beginning with tomorrow, offers you a clean, brand new page on which to write the story of your life. Forget the past. It's gone. Don't concern yourself with the opportunities you may have missed in the past. This is true of everyone. But reach out and take each new day as it comes, and ask yourself, how can I best use this day? You know we're going to run out of them eventually. If we waste an hour of productive time every day, it adds up to about 250 hours a year that our corporation, our plant, is shut down. We can earn nothing with the doors closed. What is your time worth an hour? Multiply this by 250 and you can see what you're throwing away. Now, whether your employer pays for this wasted hour or not is unimportant. Life will not pay for it. Learn to enjoy every minute of your life. Be happy now. Don't wait for something outside of yourself to make you happy in the future. As my good friend Wally Amos of Famous Amos Chocolate Cookies says, happiness is an inside job. Think how really precious is the time you have to spend, whether it's at work or with your family. Every minute should be enjoyed, savored. A human life is really nothing more than a collection of minutes, hours, and days. These are the building materials, and it's left strictly up to us to determine the kind and size structure we build. You see, a person has a tremendous advantage over even the largest corporation. Think of any large multinational corporation. Can it double its production in a single day? Of course not. Can it double its sales in a single day? Of course not. It would like to, but its growth must be a gradual, steady thing because of the interconnecting complexities of operating so large an organization. Yet a person can double, triple, quadruple his effectiveness in a month or less. It's like comparing the movement of a single scout to the movement of a great army. How have you been handling the four vital functions of your business? Finance, production, sales, research. How much time and effort are you giving to finance, to research, to the study of your work, your career? Can this be improved? What about production? Is there a way in which you can vastly improve the way in which you conduct your work? And sales, how can that be improved? Sales is more than selling a product or service. It's the way in which we sell ourselves to everyone with whom we come in contact. It's the way we get along with our associates, our spouses, our kids, our neighbors. And if our business happens to be selling, how can we see more people every day or improve the effectiveness of every part of our contact? One extra call a day comes to 250 calls a year. How many additional sales could we make with 250 additional contacts? In 5 years, that comes to 1,250 calls we would not otherwise have made. It's the difference between being average or above average. It's the difference between good and great. Taking this new active approach to life brings peace to our minds, absolute security to our future, great new stature as human beings. In this way, we can work toward reaching full maturity. With this attitude toward life, we need never for a moment concern ourselves with its outcome. It will begin to become successful tomorrow, and it will pour abundance upon us for the rest of our years.